Well, as I mentioned last hour, the Vatican's chief astronomer is simply saying that believing that the universe may contain alien life does not contradict a faith in God. It truly is an incredible story. In a moment, two special guests this hour. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Two incredible guests this hour, two next hour, and maybe more throughout the night. Paola Harris, an Italo-American photojournalist and investigative reporter in the field of extraterrestrial-related phenomena research. She is widely published, freelance writer. She has studied extraterrestrial-related phenomena since 1979 and is on personal terms with many of the leading researchers in the field. As a matter of fact, because of this incredible story about the Vatican simply saying that alien life does not contradict the faith in God, I wanted to bring Paola in because she knows Monsignor Balducci quite well, who has talked about this, and she will be with us now. Hello, Paula. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm doing fine. You caught me just as I came back from Italy. I've just come back last night. So as I told Tom, it's great to do Coast to Coast when you're on jet lag.
It sure is. Well, we're only going to keep you for an hour, and you're going to be joined by, of course, none other than our science advisor and the head of the EnterpriseMission.com and author Richard C. Hoagland, his book, of course, Dark Mission, The Hidden History of NASA. Richard's on with us tonight this hour. Richard's not, you know, he does not comment a lot about extraterrestrial visitations. He looks at the science of all this, but I'm going to bring him in because of what NASA's doing tomorrow, and I'm going to try to get Richard to speculate a little bit on what that could be. Also, Richard is going to be on a television show on the 18th, I believe, and I want him to talk about that, too. But here he is, Richard Hoagland. Hey, Richard.
Good morning, George.
How are you?
Good morning, my jet-lagged friend.
Yeah, I know. Hi, Richard. It's an honor to be on with you.
Yeah, I'm going to see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, you're coming to Boulder, Colorado, and I hope I'm awake by then. It's going to be great to see you.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping you want to come to the convention, right?
Well, I'll be coming in from Hawaii. I'm going because I'm leaving for Hawaii the day after tomorrow. I'm a little running around, but I will try to be there.
Are you sure you're not Hillary's vice presidential candidate?
Well, you know, the American system of politics here, it's very interesting. We'll see what happens.
I'm George Norrie, by the way, the guest on Richard Hoagland's Coast to Coast program.
I'm going to tell you one thing, George, though, before we go on. My next book is dedicated to you. It's called All of the Above.
Oh, you didn't ask.
And it's dedicated to you because you're always asking me what my conclusions are, yeah. And I'm always saying all of the above. And that book on exopolitics will be coming out at Roswell, so it is dedicated to you.
Paula, first I want to ask you and just get your brief reaction to the story about the Vatican. Now, you've been talking to the Monsignor for years now. He has echoed this all along. It was really never picked up by mainstream as much as this one has. Give me your take on the Vatican's chief astronomer simply saying now that, hey, there's no contradiction here. If there is alien life, he's not saying there is, but he said if there is, it's okay. What do you think?
Well, I think that anything that comes out in public like this, that's in any newspaper, and especially now it's even in the American newspapers, is sanctioned by the Vatican. We're coming down to the wire, George, the way I look at it. There's something happening here, and something that needs preparing. In other words, I think that the big top institutions, and Vatican is the major one, is one of the major ones, is preparing us for something. And the idea that Father Fuentes is 45 years old, is a young Jesuit priest, and replaced Father Coyne in 2006. Right there, I looked at the situation and thought, okay, well, there must be, like in NASA and everywhere else, a battle inside the Vatican for disclosure. And we have one younger Jesuit that probably has talked them into coming out to at least prepare the terrain. He's not saying there is extraterrestrial life, George. What he's saying is that if there is, and he made a strong statement, he said, the extraterrestrial is my brother.
Yeah.
You know, my brother.
That's pretty strong.
The existence of aliens is like ruling out this existence is like putting limits on God's creation. Now, this is something Monsignor Balducci has been saying for years, and Monsignor Balducci was not exactly sanctioned from the by the Vatican because he is retired, but he was not shut down. And the fact that he was able to speak, and he did even speak at Stephen Bassett's ex-conference 2 years ago, the fact that he was able to speak means that it's okay to talk about this. So I think it's a slow, processed release of information.
Well, and on the same day, Paula and Richard, the British History Archives comes out about secret UFO files. I mean, it's really weird, and it's really coincidental.
Well, not if you don't believe in coincidence.
That's exactly right. Richard, I wanted you to react. Now, you're going to be with us a full hour tomorrow to give us true reaction to whatever NASA announces tomorrow about what they have said, something the astronomers have been looking for 50 years.
Yeah, let's give folks a little bit of context. Last week, literally a week ago, last Wednesday, NASA announced that this Wednesday, tomorrow morning, actually Eastern time, it'll be 1 p.m., they are going to make an announcement of some kind of astronomical major discovery they have made, which is confirmation of an object, like a class of objects, they've been searching for 50 years, and the announcement is going to be the culmination of observations made by ground-based telescopes and the Chandra High Energy X-ray Observatory.
Okay.
Now, we've all been playing, you and I and a whole bunch of other people on the net, have been playing this guessing game. What could it be? What could it be? What could it be? Well, as you know, I sent you an email this afternoon when I forwarded you the Vatican story that I find it incredibly coincidental that the day before the big NASA announcement, where there's all kinds of mystery and hype and all that, suddenly we have the Vatican on record as calling the extraterrestrial is my brother in the form of the director of the Vatican Observatory.
And you have to also add in the British UFO release.
And then the British UFO thing. Now, remember, we don't do at Enterprise UFOs.
No.
Not because we don't, quote, believe in the phenomenology, but because I made a specific scientific and political decision years ago that we would work in the vineyards where almost nobody else was ever working, i.e. extraterrestrial archaeology. There's a lot of incredibly eminent and capable people. We got one of them on the line with us right now, Paula, who cover the UFO beat up, down, backwards, forwards, inside and out.
Yeah.
I try to choose the road less traveled, and extraterrestrial archaeology is definitely still the road less traveled. So what's the big picture? What do I think is going to happen tomorrow? If we go by the George Norrie cosmology, that there is no such thing as coincidence, we have these three events 2 days apart. We have the London UFO files release with some pretty amazing data of credible people seeing incredible things, and Paula can talk more about that in a couple of minutes. We then have the Vatican story this afternoon, which comes directly from the official Vatican newspaper. Paula, how do you pronounce that?
L'Osservatore. It's called L'Osservatore. And it is the official Vatican newspaper, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that makes it even more astounding.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like the Washington Post is the mouthpiece for whatever administration is sitting over in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this big NASA announcement. So you put it all together and you say, okay, what could the big announcement be? My bet, and it's actually been coming up on the inside track since we last, you know, exchanged emails on this, George, I think they may be going to announce they've found some kind of terrestrial Earth-like planet.
I think you're right. I think it's Planet X.
Well, you mean in the solar system?
Somewhere out there, yeah. 50 years they've been looking for it for...
Let me tell you why I don't think that's right. Because planets do not emit X-rays. Absolutely, that's not in the cards.
All right, well, let me ask
you. If it is a Chandra X-ray detection, it means it has to be a planet orbiting another star, that under peculiar conditions around that solar system, around that star, that planet is emitting X-rays, re-emitting from its upper atmosphere, X-rays coming from its solar wind, from its star, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it is extrasolar and not in the system. And that would, of course, tie in with the Vatican, because once you find one credible Earth-like planet where you can actually see it in the X-ray images orbiting a star, it suddenly opens, as Carl Sagan used to say, the galaxy is teeming with life. And I think that Powell is absolutely right. I call this model the time-release aspirin theory. We've discussed this on this show umpteen times, going back to when Art, you know, sat in that chair. We are being prepared. I totally agree, Paula. We are being prepared. The only question is, when are they going to make the big announcement, which is, oh, my God, we're not alone.
All right, but, Richard, the key here, and everyone seems to be overlooking, is that NASA said something they've been looking for 50 years. That tells me whatever they've been looking for, they knew about it 50 years ago.
Well, we know theoretically that other solar systems had to exist. They actually only began detecting them maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Well, why 50 years? Why does that year thing come up?
50 years ago is when NASA was formed. This is the 50th anniversary of NASA.
All right, so NASA was formed. Let me ask you this, because I'm doing a little detective work here. What was the mission of NASA when it was formed? Why did they say, we are forming NASA?
Well, if I want to be kind of, you know, cute about it, I can quote Gene Roddenberry.
All right.
To seek out new life and new civilization.
Okay, so if they said that 50 years ago, that's why they formed NASA, would it then not be accurate to say that that's the beginning of what they've been looking for 50 years? I think they possibly could have found some kind of life.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be Chandra. Chandra would not be involved. The fact that they specifically...
Maybe Chandra backs up some things.
No. Chandra is looking at incredibly high-energy stuff that destroys life.
Yeah, but wouldn't they have to know? If you make a statement, Richard, George, I've been looking for you for 50 years. I finally found you. That means you knew 50 years ago that I was out there and you were looking for
me. No, but if you are thinking of a class of objects, you know theoretically that they must exist. You just don't have any data. 50 years later, you finally get confirmation from real data that this class of things you thought might exist actually exist. That's how I interpret it.
Well, they have found 200 or 300 planets so far. Why would this one be different?
But they haven't seen them. Those are all models in a computer from the Doppler shift of the motion of the star the planet orbits around.
What if they found the sun's twin? I mean, they've been talking that we've got a binary star system here.
That's not a bad horse, George. That's a very credible, because it would have to be dim in the optical, in the visible range. But we know those quasi-planet stars, like round dwarfs they're called, they can emit X-rays when they flare. So maybe they found through Chandra by accident the flaring of a brown dwarf that is almost invisible in any amateur telescope or any professional telescope, certainly from the ground. And that, of course, would open up a whole can of worms as to the sun, what it's really doing in the galaxy, its motions, the precessional cycle, you know, the stuff that Walter Cruttendon, you know, has us all come to his conferences every year and talk about down in San Diego in October.
I have a question, Richard, too, though. Could they have possibly found some kind of alien artifact like you had done on the UFO that was caught in the in the mountain there in Mars? I mean, could they have found an alien artifact that could be, you know, thousands and thousands of years old? Could they announce an alien artifact? If they did, then that would piggyback on this story from the Vatican, and they would say, "Well, there, you know, we found this thing buried in the sand or in some kind of milieu, and it isn't like that statue that was seen on Mars, but something a little bit, because the supposed statue, mermaid statue, whatever that was seen, that's gone around the world five times."
seems to be a prelude to something that is extraterrestrial that could be found on Mars. Is it possible?
They know about your upcoming TV show, Richard, and they want to hedge you off at the pass.
Hey, that would be great. I'd love to be upstaged by an announcement.
You never know.
We'll get to that the TV show in a minute. Let me back up. Chandra is an orbiting telescope in Earth orbit, launched by NASA several years ago, the most sophisticated X-ray high-energy observatory ever launched. It was launched by the shuttle, by the way, and in 1995, I think. And it is in Earth orbit. It's not going anywhere. It's not orbiting Mars, not orbiting the Moon. It's in Earth orbit, and it looks out into deep space. It looks at incredibly energetic astrophysical processes that emit X-rays in copious amounts. So whatever this discovery is, it has to involve X-rays detected by this massive X-ray observatory orbiting the Earth. That's not going to be any artifacts on another planet unless they were incredibly, active like beacons.
So there's not going to be a Cydonia verification,
No,
huh?
Absolutely not. So if you're trying to do this kind of cute little game, what could they find before they announce it tomorrow, you have to take into account the pieces of the puzzle you've been given. And the two pieces are ground-based observations have been looking for this thing, this class of things.
For 50 years,
since NASA was formed. There's a little bit of, I think, political hype there about NASA. And The other is that Chandra was critical to the confirmation. That limits the possibilities dramatically. Now, if you expand your universe of coincidences and say that the London UFO file revelations and the Vatican announcement that, extraterrestrials are our brothers are all part of the same can of worms, which is a leap. I mean, we don't have data actually saying that these things are really connected.
All right. What if they have now found a planet that could be exactly Earth-like in another system, and that backs up the Vatican?
That's the part of the time-released aspirin, because it's moving us down the field toward the goalpost. And the goalpost is an official declaration, humankind is not alone.
And then part two is they get Seth Shostak and company to move all their telescope arrays toward this planet, and voila.
No, that's not a big deal. I mean, remember years ago, it was one of the early primitive X-ray observatories that found that comets in our solar system, which are these cold, icy objects in the standard model, are emitting X-rays. And everybody said, that's impossible. You got to have hot stuff that emits X-rays. It turned out that the gases and the dust around the nucleus of a comet is basically reflecting X-rays coming from the sun and from the impingement of the solar wind on the gases that surround the comet. So there are secondary sources that are very chilly, cold, but in fact they are detectable with X-ray telescopes. So I'm presuming that because Chandra is so sensitive that it could pick up planetary X-ray generation in another nearby star system light years away, and they could actually see this object twinkling in X-rays, take pictures.
Okay. Well, you might be right.
And then calibrate that along with Jeff Marcy and the other guys are doing the Doppler, which is the ground-based work, which has been finding these planets in the computer through their Doppler profiles, their light shifts back and forth, which makes is the result of the planet swinging the star around little tiny arcs that are invisible. You can't see the planet, but you see the star moving in the Doppler plots.
Well, when we come back, Richard and Paula, we're going to take a bet. I'm going to get from each of you your guess on what this announcement's going to be tomorrow, and then we'll continue talking with both of you. And you, Paula, I want you to react to the story about the Brits releasing their very confidential UFO files as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paula Harris, let me ask you to get your reaction to the Brits releasing their confidential UFO reports. What do you think?
Well, I think it's amazing, but I've been in constant contact with Nick Pope. I was in contact with Nick Pope over this, but also for the fact that, and I'm going to announce this too, that the rock star Robbie Williams is very, very interested in UFOs, and we have to have a rock star before we get into the front page of the papers, which is the way the world works these days, because my picture with Nix was in the London Sun with this rock star. But let me tell you something, George. The official notice says the Ministry of Defense plans to open its X-Files, the UFO sightings, to the public for the first time, and they date back to 1967. It'll be within the next few weeks. But the move follows a decision by the French National Space Agency to release its UFO files in March, the first official body in the world to do so. So even though we've got the British doing this, we have the French very much involved in doing this. And when you talk to Michael Sala later on and Alfred Weber, we know that the French are very active, especially with the UN situation, in looking at this as serious. And the thing, George, is so disturbing is that the French, the British, the people in South America, Mexico, Venezuela, and so forth, take this seriously. Even if it's a matter of national security, it's a subject that's taken seriously. And I'm waiting for the U.S. to step in line, to step up to the plate and do the same thing so we can all be on the same page. Nick Pope has announced that he's involved in this. You know, he's ex-MOD.
Right.
And, yeah, and even though the files date back to 67, we don't know if they're going to come current. It's a great part of the disclosure project.
Oh, Paula, it sure is. It's one of the greatest, and I just hope that more nations continue to do this. The one story I talked about that came out of the Brit file had to do with these air traffic controllers. Credible. They know things. They see things. They don't make mistakes like that of these objects. They saw one land, pick up, and go off again in incredible speed.
Yeah, I mean, just that. George, does it ever make you think that with this as a testimony, plus what James Fox did, bringing in the French pilot that had the commercial airliner,
yes.
You know, Dubrock, that had the UFO beside him as he's flying along with all the passengers looking, that we haven't started talking about this seriously? I mean, I'm wondering what it's going to take, because I think the rest of the world takes this seriously. I mean, it's become part of our news bank. But I'd love to see this happen in the USA. So I'm really excited about it. If it's got to come in from the outside, whatever it takes, I'm really excited about this disclosure.
Richard, tell me a little bit about the network's interest in the work you've been doing, because this kind of ties into everything we're talking about.
Well, we seem to be, as again, Paolo alluded to earlier, on some kind of time-released aspirin curve or disclosure at some level, not domestically. I mean, the U.S. government and NASA, I think, are going to resist till the last dog dies, as one sign behind Hillary said tonight in West Virginia. But the rest of the world appears to be moving inexorably in the direction of admitting something which should have been admitted, you know, 60 years ago, that the human race is not alone and there's somebody flying through our skies, and they, in fact, may ultimately be related, which goes back to the ET archaeology that we've been investigating for the last 25 or so years. When Mike Barra and I published Dark Mission, which was last October, we've had the most extraordinary ride, you know, which is the theme song of this program.
Mm-hmm.
It became a New York Times bestseller. It's been read by all kinds of government people, including NASA flight controllers who have been in touch with us, people in the CIA, people in the State Department, people even in NASA. You know, none of them want their names public or known or bandied about, of course. But there's a tremendous effort to kind of stamp out burning ducks. There's actually intel agents who have written very snippy hit pieces trying to destroy our credibility and the credibility of the book, because it's being taken seriously by too many serious inside NASA and aerospace people. Well, when all this kind of was at its height, we suddenly were approached by NBC, who was they're doing a program which will be aired this coming Sunday night for 2 hours on Sci-Fi around the launch of George Lucas's new film with Steven Spielberg, Indiana Jones.
Oh, sure, The Forbidden
Land. And the search for
Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Well, what in the world does my efforts and you know, Dark Mission have to do with an Indiana Jones film? I was kind of intrigued to find out that the book was being read by the producers, the executive producers, the line producers, and they wanted to know, they wanted me to come on and talk about crystals, crystal structures on the moon. So, of course, I said, guys, you haven't gotten to the end of the book yet, right? No, we're kind of passing it around. I said, well, wait till you find out about C-3PO, i.e. Data's head. And there was this big silence. What? So I gave them a tutorial over the phone through email. They sent a camera crew, and they spent an entire day here. And you're going to actually see some of where Enterprise lives here in Albuquerque. They have produced a two-hour special that apparently, according to the teasers that are on the sci-fi website, are going to include a tremendous amount of our own research, going back to when I was a NASA consultant, when I was science advisor to Walter Cronkite and covering the Apollo missions, and they're going to include very seriously the idea that these crystal skulls, which are potentially artifacts built and left by some incredibly advanced, sophisticated civilization here on Earth, containing some kind of information or memory crystals or encoded information, are part of the larger context, which we've been discussing for 25 years, that there is a whole ancient solar system-wide civilization, which current human civilization has been bereft to know about, has been kept from knowing about, which has been suppressed in official histories, like, you know, Graham Hancock and Robert Bavall and those guys.
You keep us thinking, Richard. You really do.
And they have done this two-hour program, of which we're apparently going to be a major part. And the teaser is on darkmission.net. I think Mike has now linked to it. I sent you a copy.
Mm-hmm.
I've sent some other people copies. And we'll all find out together how much of a role we're going to play in this on Sunday night. But I go back to the political, George. I look at all these data points, and I say, is all this just happening helter-skelter and by accident? And I don't think so.
Nothing happens by accident.
I think this NBC production, because remember, NBC, you know, owns sci-fi.
Yes.
It was an official unit. By the way, during the filming, the producer who came from New York was incredibly skeptical. You know, the usual New York skeptical producer.
Mm-hmm.
And about halfway through the filming, we stopped to take a break or whatever, and he took Robin aside, and he told her before he told me what he was going to ask me later in the filming. So we go back in, and we resume, you know, it's actually not film, it's HD.
Tell me you didn't wear the bolo, by the way.
Did not wear the bolo.
Okay, good.
No. Did not. I thought of you, and I did not wear the bolo.
Good. I'm dressing you these days.
Anyway, he asked me point blank, he said, Mr. Hoagland, would you like your own special on this?
I love it.
This is an NBC producer. Now, what I think is going on, and this is why...
And, of course, you thought about it for weeks.
Actually, right? I told him, I said, I'm not interested.
Oh, right.
You
come
should.
On.
I did. It's on tape. We taped it.
I want to hear it.
And you're going to see it. We taped it in HD with our own cameras, because I want a record of everything. And you should have seen this guy's face. His name is Andrew. He's a hell of a nice guy. He was so shocked. Someone would turn down an NBC offer of a special on their work. And then I said, gotcha. So what I think is going to happen is I think they're putting a lot of our material in this special to, as they used to say back east, run up the flagpole and see who salutes. When they look at the numbers on this Indiana Jones Crystal Skull special featuring a major portion of our work on the solar system and the exigencies of who's out there and who may have left incredible artifacts, including a robot head on the moon that could be part of the whole crystal skull mythos. They will then look at those numbers, the Nielsen's, and if enough people from this audience, this is the payoff, guys, if enough of you folks listening to Paula and George and me right now tune into sci-fi Sunday night, look up your local listing for time and channel and all that, and the numbers, the ratings are over the top like they should be if this audience is the same folks that made New York Times bestseller of Dark Mission, then we may get our special, in which case we can present all of the evidence that we've been accumulating quietly for the last 25 years. And, yes, disclosure will be that much closer if that indeed occurs.
And it's all happening at the same time. Paula, you've seen the data head that Richard is talking about on his pictures?
Yes, I have. But can I add one more thing? Because I'm listening to Richard, and I also have to mention that in the film they mention Roswell, Richard. I hate to throw that in there, but in the Indiana Jones film they mention Roswell,
Well, no, they do because not giving anything away, but the crystal skull, the MacGuffin that Indiana Jones, who the opening scene I think is in that big warehouse where they stashed the Ark of the Covenant. At the end of the first film?
Yeah.
That warehouse, it turns out, may be where an alien crystal skull from a Roswell contact was also stashed, and Indiana is in there looking for it when the film opens.
Oh, okay. I love it. That's going to be a great movie. Now, we got to take our bet. We're going to take our bet on NASA's announcement tomorrow. We'll go with you first, Paula.
Okay, well, I think we should really listen to Richard's research because he knows what's happening, he's part of the team. I mean, we're all a team. But I'd love it to be. I'll tell you what I would love it to be if I win this bet. I would love it to be an alien artifact rather than a planet or something, flying around. Because if it's an alien artifact, we get past the planet and we get to the actual aliens, the people, because we're too long spending time on the craft with nothing in it, and I would like it to be that there's entities or life. So I wish it would be, I don't know if I'll ever win this, something that actually has aliens attached to it, like an artifact.
What if they found, like, the starship from Star Wars? You never know. All right, so your bet is some kind of alien life.
Alien life form that proves that we are not alone with people there, people involved. I'd rather it be that than a planet.
All right, my take is because I think Richard could be right, there could be some kind of huge planet out there beyond our solar system that they have found beyond the 300. He'll explain his theory that we've already found. But I think they're going to say they have found a binary star system here in our solar system that we had a twin sun, and it burned out. Richard, now your take.
You know, I really do like that, George.
Do you really?
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it.
Well,
It would answer so many questions, particularly the kind of Walter Crutton and John Anthony West and Graham and I and others have kicked around for several years in these conferences every October. I'm going to disappoint people. I'm going to say that I don't think it's any of those things because I know NASA. NASA is not brave. NASA is not going to make the big leap and make the big announcement without all kinds of little baby steps up to and including an environment to have life. So I'm betting that it might be a planet that can harbor life. It might actually be a planet orbiting Alpha Centauri, which is the closest star system to ours, 4.7 light years away, in which case it would be pretty easy for Chandra to have picked up this signal to make images. They correlate it with the sloshing and the Doppler. So I'm thinking that might be the most provocative would hook in these three separate announcements, the Vatican, the UFO stuff from Brits, and I agree with Paula that they're following on the French and the Brazilians and the Mexicans, everybody but us, right?
Everybody but us, right.
Yep. So, but if I'm being squeaky clean conservative science, I'm going to say it's going to be something incredibly stupidly boring, like they found a real black hole and they've got images, Chandra images of the X-rays and the event horizon, something really mundane. Because my gut tells me that we don't follow the other dots, that the United States is going to be the holdout because the cover-up central for all this stuff is here. And it's kind of like everybody in the world got that Iraq was a bad idea, and it took the American people last to get the idea that that's not how you combat terrorism by going and invading another country that never did anything to you. So based on the political model, I'm saying it's going to be something dumbly mundane, and that the Vatican and the London things are linked together separately That's the rest of the world trying to put pressure on us to come clean, and we're going to resist till the last dog dies.
Well,
Richard, what about the fact that Obama does not want to support research in outer space, and if he wins, NASA doesn't have a chance, so NASA has to jump in there with something exciting. Is that a possibility?
Oh, no, that's an excellent idea, Paula, and we can discuss it when you come and see my speech of the Libertarian
Convention. That's going to happen, so they have to jump in there and be stars of the show. Otherwise, Obama,
if
he wins, is not going to support any space efforts.
Maybe.
Don't you think?
Nothing is for certain. Nothing is written in stone. Every position of every candidate is changed and is changing. This is an election like we have never lived through in any of our lifetimes. Even you old timers out there that remember Kennedy like I do and beyond.
Well, this is also a ho-hum election. You know that.
I don't think it's ho-hum at all.
No, I do. I bet if we took a poll, you'd find that most people are not excited about
it. You know how I know it's not ho-hum?
How?
By the amount of hours of coverage on all the cable channels.
We're in the electronic age now, Richard, and that's all they do.
If they were not making money with advertising and viewers...
Look what they did when Anna Nicole died. I mean, they did her 24/7.
Yeah, but they didn't have programs, series. I mean, Dan, what's his name, just did 3 hours of political after hours with a jazz band, for God's sake.
I know what, but it's too much. I'm telling you, most of the people during this campaign that they don't think we have any viable candidates, honestly. I mean, I'm not knocking Barack Obama or Hillary or McCain.
I'm
simply saying that we lack that charismatic candidate. We don't have it.
I don't think we have it, but the illusion from the outside world is that Obama is that one. That there's an illusion out there from Europe, because I've just been there for 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, but the Europeans aren't voting, Paula.
No, they aren't, but they seem to think that Obama is darned exciting. They do seem to think it, even though it may not be the case.
Having worked in network television, guys, I know that the programmers do not program this number of hours unless there was a viewership that was sitting chained to the screen watching every single pundit and every single number. It wouldn't be happening unless there was a huge demographic of American voters that are interested and tuned in and following this. Why do you think all these primaries are getting such extraordinary turnout? For the first time in our lifetime, voters in West Virginia this morning and today got a chance to actually make a difference, as will the ones in Montana and Oregon and Puerto Rico in the next couple, 3 weeks from Kentucky. I mean, this is an election cycle like we've never seen, and all the positions, all I'm going to caution everybody is all the positions that the candidates are taking are open to change because the electorate is ahead of the candidate.
Well, it's about time.
Look at John McCain and his environmental energy policy.
Richard, the clock's got us. We'll talk with you tomorrow. You got a lot of work tomorrow after that announcement, whatever it may be. But the bet is on. In a moment, Michael Sala joins us. We're going to get his reaction to some of the things you've heard right here on Coast to Coast AM. Paula, thanks for coming on the show. Well, thank you, Richard. Paula, fascinating discussion last hour. It continues because next up, Dr. Michael Sala on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Michael Sala. He's a pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's the author of several books and has a PhD in government from the University of Queensland, Australia. Dr. Sala is the founder of the Exopolitics Institute, a not-profit organization that analyzes the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Here he is now. Hey, Michael, how are you?
To be back.
Good to have you with us, too, my friend. What's new with you?
Working busily on the upcoming conference. Paula mentioned she's coming to Hawaii at the end of this week. She's actually going to be one of the key presenters at the Earth Transformation Conference we're having here on the Big Island from May 16th to 18th. So I'm pretty busy organizing that.
We've got a lot of friends out there. Lots of friends out there, Michael.
More coming out all the time. Hard keeping up with her.
Absolutely. Hey, what's your take on the Vatican? This somewhat of an announcement that, the possibility of alien life isn't all that bad, that doesn't contradict their faith.
Well, I think it's a very significant development. Paola Harris mentioned that previously Corrado Balducci had kind of floated that idea that aliens were not something that would challenge the Vatican's theological position. But he was a retired Monsignor, which is a priest with who has been honored by the Pope, and he was an advisor to Pope John Paul II, and he spoke at a number of venues about the presence of extraterrestrial life not being a challenge to Vatican theological principles. But what we have with this announcement is that now it's gone up to an official level where you have Jose Funes, who's the chief astronomer for the Vatican Observatory there in Rome, actually saying that the existence of extraterrestrial life and that they are could be our brothers is something that is consistent with the Vatican theological position. So that is a very significant development. And I think what is very interesting about this is that it follows on the heels of this development at the United Nations in early February.
That we talked about, that's right.
And what was important was that at that meeting, it was decided that in response to the increased number of UFO sightings around the world, that the 30 countries that were represented at that meeting confidentially agreed that they would implement a policy of openness, that this was going to be a significant change from the earlier policies that we've seen here in the US and elsewhere of debunking automatically UFO reports to one of openness, whereby the reports would be considered on their face value. And I think that what we're seeing here with the Vatican position being made clear at an official level that extraterrestrial life doesn't challenge theological principles, with the UFO files being released by the British government and by the French, that we are moving into this new policy phase of openness. And that is very significant because it means that there's just going to be much more official interest in all of the evidence which has been sitting there for many decades without being analysed or evaluated in any way. And so, for example, with the British files that are being released, I mean, these are files dating back decades, and they're just observations. There's no analysis, evaluation attached to those files. And so what will happen now with this openness policy is that a lot of this data is going to be officially analyzed, and that's going to be very interesting.
Why does the United States appear to be one of the last bastions for openness?
Well, the United States has the most to lose in many ways because it has been the leading agency or country when it comes to secrecy over...
And denial.
And denial, because they have run the black projects. They have had, according to some estimates, projects that have been funded by a black budget of close to $1.7 trillion a year. And that means that if this was ever exposed, the American public would never stand for it. I mean, how would the American public feel if they understood that the CIA had been secretly amassing funds from various different sources to the tune of $1.7 trillion or something in that figure? I mean, the American public wouldn't stand for it. So the American secret agencies have had the most to lose if these were ever exposed.
Okay, back to the Vatican a little bit in this UN meeting. Who do you think was the one who pushed the softening here?
Well, at the United Nations meeting, it was an agreement by all the countries there that they would move forward with this new policy of openness. Now, one of the participants at that meeting was an archbishop, Archbishop Celestino Migliore, who is the permanent papal representative to the United Nations. So I would think that he went back and he reported to the Vatican what had transpired at that meeting. He had reported back that the major nations were in agreement that there would be this new policy of openness. And, of course, the Vatican would see this as an opportunity to play a leading role. Because, I mean, the Vatican has a lot of negative PR to overcome. I mean, many centuries of persecuting scientists. You've had the scandal over the priests and the sex scandals there. So the Vatican has a lot of negative PR to overcome. So I think openness on the extraterrestrial issue, UFOs, would be something that would help the Vatican overcome this and actually project it into a kind of forward-looking position. And I think this is why you're getting this kind of positive initiative from the Vatican. They're coming forward saying things like that the presence of advanced extraterrestrial life doesn't challenge theological principles at all, and that, in fact, that that the extraterrestrials may be without original sin. In other words, that they can be advanced, benevolent beings that can help us, that we don't have to be frightened of them. And I think this is a very constructive position to take, because it means that the Vatican, because it does have a tremendous influence over a billion Catholics in the world, it can play a great role in kind of making people feel more comfortable that these extraterrestrials, when and if they appear over skies, are not something to be feared. We're not talking about Independence Day extraterrestrials here to kind of gobble us up in their kind of galactic imperial quest. That these are beings that are without original sin. Not as highly evolved as angels, but without original sin. And there's a very important theological principle for why that is so, and I can explain that if you want.
Sure, and I think you're right, Michael. I mean, I think that the Vatican, the Church, has been riddled with scandal over the years. And to come forward with something like this, to talk about science and its involvement, I think it really does kind of take some of the pressure off, so to speak, doesn't it?
It does, because it does present the Vatican in a very positive light, that here is a very old institution plagued by all these scandals, but yet they are taking a very positive role to disclose the truth, get people ready for the announcement that extraterrestrial life is real. And I think the Vatican is also very cleverly positioning itself for what will follow an official announcement that extraterrestrial life is real. And that is because the Vatican theological position on extraterrestrial life, as was announced by Jose Funes and also by Corrado Balducci, was that extraterrestrials are probably without original sin, but they are less evolved than the angels. And what that means is that extraterrestrials, because they are without original sin, means that they did not have a need for Christ to incarnate. But humans, because we were born with original sin, we had to have Christ born here so that through vicarious atonement we could be saved, and therefore in the afterlife we can go to heaven. And what that means is that the incarnation of the Christ and the crucifixion of the Christ is unique to Earth. So that means that the Vatican is positioning itself for a galactic crusade. So how's that? That the Vatican is positioning itself so that it can send off its Jesuits and other missionaries to other planets preaching the gospel that the crucifixion of Christ is unique to Earth.
You think it is, though? It may be throughout the entire universe.
Well, that is the theological position that Corrado Balducci and Jose Funes have stated, with this belief that the extraterrestrials are born without original sin. And that is very different to humans who are born with original sin and needed.
I wonder if they're angels, Michael.
Well, and that's another thing. Corrado Balducci said that they're less evolved than the angels, which means that they are not Christ, that they are not the messengers of God. In other words, that humans, because we have had this experience with the Christ, are uniquely positioned to be able to give this message of salvation and redemption through this Christ incarnation on Earth, which is unique to Earth.
Michael, the Vatican has done some work, or I believe they may know something about the possibility of ancient extraterrestrial life here on this planet. Why is this still being hidden?
The Vatican has a library which has been accumulating evidence of all sorts of secret doctrines, philosophies, teachings, witness sightings throughout its history. And what you will find in the Vatican Library is a lot of information about ancient reports of extraterrestrial sightings. I mean, you can go back to the Roman Empire to see reports of extraterrestrial sightings. There are many historic texts, not only from the Christian Judaic tradition, but also from the Vedic traditions, that would also be studied very intensely in the secret Vatican archives down there in their library. So the Vatican is sitting on a storehouse of ancient evidence dating back thousands of years concerning extraterrestrial life. And this is something that really needs to be considered in terms of just how much information they have been withholding from the general public for many, many centuries, let alone the 40, 50 years that the U.S. government has had some very important information on extraterrestrial life.
Michael, what do you think of the timing? The British release of its confidential UFO files, the Vatican statement, NASA tomorrow, which may be just a general science news conference, who knows. But what about the timing of all this?
Well, I'm not surprised at all, because I've been studying the developments concerning the secret UN meetings that occurred in February, and slowly the news is being leaked out that these meetings did occur. They have been confirmed by various sources, and we look at some of the participants that were named attending that source those meetings. One was the Vatican Archbishop that I mentioned, Millior. Another was Sir John Sawyers, who is the British permanent representative to the United Nations. He was also attending that meeting, and he was present when this new policy of openness was agreed. So I am not surprised at all that the British government is going to be playing a positive role on this issue, because the a release that the British government has just made is really letting out a lot of information that has been kept secreted away at the Ministry of Defence, and it's going to be now available for detailed analysis by scholars and researchers, and they're going to be able to make more breakthroughs in exactly what has been seen in British skies. And I think this is all part of a general trend of openness, official openness, to get the public primed. Richard Hoagland was talking about his time-released aspirin curve, and I thought that was quite cute, because that is, in fact, where we are now. I think we're in this phase of information being released in a way that can be absorbed by the general population, that isn't going to cause any panic, because that was one of the conditions that actually was stated at the UN meetings in February 12 to 14, that there were two conditions. One was that the UFO sightings would continue at the present level, which indicated that this policy was being externally driven. In other words, that the extraterrestrials themselves were showing up frequently enough to force a policy change in the major governments. And the second condition was that the liberal democratic systems in major countries and developing countries would not be threatened in any way by this new change of policy towards openness.
Well, Michael, it's coming up close, isn't it? It's happening.
I think we are at this unique point in our history as a civilization where we are going to go from being an insular, doubting civilization of anything out there to one where we are now aware of extraterrestrial life and welcome them and actually begin to learn exactly what is out there, what level of technology they have developed. One of the things I'm going to be doing at the upcoming conference here in Hawaii, the Earth Transformation Conference, I'm going to be talking about some of the work of a Soviet astronomer, Nikolai Kardashev, and his work was popularized by Michio Kaku concerning the typology of extraterrestrial civilizations in terms of the energy that they use. So you can look at extraterrestrial civilizations in terms of either being type zero, using fossil fuels, limited resources as we use, to type one, where they use resources at a planetary level, type two, using resources at a stellar level, and then type three, using resources at a galactic level, that extraterrestrial civilizations will have gone through that curve. So some of them that are visiting us will be definitely type zero, type one. Others visiting us are going to be type two, type three, which means that, you know, we can pick and choose who we want to work with in terms of how evolved they are. And that I think is going to be a really fascinating exercise for all of us as we learn exactly how evolved the extraterrestrials are.
Michael, I'm going to keep you around next half hour with Alfred Weber, and then possibly phone calls with you later on as well. Your work over the years in this arena, I think, is also finally getting recognized. Do you feel that?
Definitely. I think many people were initially very skeptical of the whole idea of looking at the public policy implications of extraterrestrial life. They were saying, well, the data isn't conclusive. It's only when we have indubitable data that can't be controverted, only then should we begin to speculate or look at these policy implications. But I've been arguing all along that we're not going to have that kind of incontrovertible level of proof just because of the nature of the system or the problem that we're dealing with. And so I've been doing and encouraging the public policy analysis of all of the data, which is why developments like the UN meetings, developments such as we have here with the Jose Funes coming forward with this new position that the Vatican has on extraterrestrial life, that we need to look at these public policy implications of all of this and not wait for the day when ETs show up or when the president makes his official announcement from the White House.
Do you think this NASA announcement tomorrow is going to be anything grand in terms of maybe they've pulled some folks from SETI out to say, we heard something?
Well, I didn't hear of any NASA involvement at the UN meeting, so I would be skeptical that NASA is going to come out with anything groundbreaking. I think what's happening is that other countries, Britain, the Vatican, and especially the French, we can talk about the French later, the French are playing a very powerful role in pushing this forward. So I think we're probably going to see this coming from other countries rather than US agencies like NASA. But I would be very pleasantly surprised if something does emerge tomorrow.
Michael, if people want more information on the things you do, how do they find your website? What is it?
They can just go to exopolitics.org, or they can go to the earthtransformation.com for the latest in terms of this conference that I'm involved in and where I'll be speaking this coming Sunday.
Why is it happening so quickly, the feeling that we're beginning to learn something about this entire phenomenon?
Well, I think just the information age, just the level of evidence that is now being circulated and the number of people that are passing along high-quality photos and videos on YouTube and through their various chat groups and online forums, that I think it's reaching a critical mass where now enough people believe that this is real, that previously it was something that they could dismiss because they didn't have any personal experience. But so many people are now having their own direct personal experiences or hearing about the personal experiences of close friends or relatives that they trust, and they can't dismiss this any longer. And I think also the extraterrestrials themselves are driving the process by appearing more often in the skies. And I think that is a very important factor, and that was something that I think was driving the UN meetings.
All right, Michael, up next with you, Alfred Weber. Groundbreaking work as a futurist at the Stanford Research Institute, but back in 77, he directed a proposed extraterrestrial communication study. He's next. We're going to continue our special report on the Vatican statement that they believe that aliens just don't contradict faith at all. It's a great story. We'll be back with Alfred Weber, who's joining Dr. Michael Sulla next on Coast to Coast AM. Alfred Weber, he's done groundbreaking work as a futurist at the Stanford Research Institute, where in 1977 directed a proposed extraterrestrial communication study project for the Carter White House. Alfred is currently the international director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space, and here he is joining Michael Sulla. Hello, Alfred. How are you? Welcome back.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Well, you know, your expertise is so important, especially, Alfred, to react to the story about the Vatican simply saying it's okay to believe in aliens. You know, I think back to my days and my catechism days. I don't think they ever would have said this 30 or 40 years ago, ever. And here they come out with a statement. Why the change, in your opinion?
Yeah. You know, George, I'm really glad you said that word catechism, because I think you hit the nail right on the head with a hammer. Today, and this is crucial, and it ties into what Dr. Michael Sulla, my colleague, was saying, today is the 91st anniversary of the first major UFO encounter of the 20th century, which occurred on May 13th, 1917, And we know that as the Fatima miracle. And that's a very, very key event in the Catholic Church, which was supposedly that the Virgin Mary appeared to three Portuguese children. We now know from a series of groundbreaking books called the Fatima Trilogy, written by several Portuguese scholars, edited by Andrew Bachago in Anomalous Books, that these, in fact, were UFO encounters, which are covered up by the Catholic Church. Today, May 13th, 2008, is the day that the Jesuit head of the Vatican Observatory chose to release this news. And I don't think that that is an accident, because the Catholic Church is a 2,000-year-old institution. And it is now having to cope with the inside knowledge, with the fact that it's been selling to the public UFO encounters as Virgin Mary miracles. And they've known from the inside that they've been UFO encounters for a long time. And we know that from the scholarship, because the archives which were revealed in this book show that the inside documents what the Catholic Church knew said that there were spinning saucers, that there were falling angel fare, there were small extraterrestrial beings running around. There were auditory effects such as you see at ET encounters. And yet they sold this to the public on May 13th, 1917 and forward as the Fatima miracle. And then in the 1960s, the Fatima became the major anti-communist miracle. Mm-hmm. And then Pope John Paul II, after he was shot and he took the bullet from his stomach, and he took that bullet and he put it in the crown of the Virgin of Fatima at the actual Fatima grotto there. And so there's been this worship, and yet the documents from the inside, going back to 1917, they knew that it was a UFO encounter. So the Catholic Church, like the Communist Party, has a great problem here. And they're seeking to do it with great finesse to kind of begin to leak to the public, well, folks, maybe it wasn't the Virgin Mary, and we're going to leak it to you slowly, and we're going to tell you that eventually that it wasn't the Virgin Mary, that it was a series of small extraterrestrial beings that we've been selling you since 1917 was Fatima. Now, what seems to have, Michael was quite correct, what seems to have driven, for example, the reported February 12th UN UFO meetings was the January 8th, 2008 Stephenville UFO sightings, where a one-mile-wide craft, right, George, which we all know is reported on Larry King Live, et cetera, glided over Stephenville, Texas. The driving motive here, I think, that drove this Vatican statement, and there's a connection here, because the Vatican Observatory has two locations. One is in Casa Gandolfo, but the other is in Arizona.
That's right. We just talked to a Jesuit priest who's one of the astronomers out there.
Yeah, yeah. And so this relates to, George, the Phoenix red lights of April 21st, 2001, which were in the formation of the famous March.
Actually, 1997, Phoenix lights, because it's been 10 years now.
No.
Or was this another one?
Yeah, there were the March 13th Phoenix lights, March 13th, 1997,
okay,
of a two-mile-wide spacecraft. But then on April 21st, 2008, the Phoenix Lights reappeared.
Right.
And jets were the same thing that happened back in March 13, 1990s happened where jets were launched out of Luke Air Force Base. There were multiple sightings. It was on all the Phoenix television stations. There are a couple of people that said, "Oh, we launched balloons, we launched flares,
lanterns."
Yeah, lanterns. These hoax stories were quickly dismissed. We went and applied what we called the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, which was launched back in the 70s, and that theory holds that all UFO sightings, which are extraterrestrial in origin, are actually meaningful symbolic communications from a higher intelligence source. They're like dreams from your subconscious to your conscious mind, i.e. they're a form of symbolic meaningful communication. Well, if we look at what was occurring on April 21st, 2008, you're involved in that, George, actually. There was a very important exopolitics press conference occurring on that day at the National Press Club.
Exactly.
In Washington, D.C., at which an initiative for civil society organizations announced an initiative at the United Nations to implement the 1978 UN General Assembly decision, which mandated the UN to open a Department of Unidentified Flying Objects, and which asked all member nations to open up research projects on extraterrestrial life, which is what France has been doing, England has been doing, Mexico, Brazil, etc.
Alfred, do you think the Pope's visit to the White House and the UN before these announcements, do you think that is coincidental?
Yeah, I think that this Pope is very much involved and has given the executive decision to move forward on all of the disclosure initiatives,
mm-hmm.
and that these are closely coordinated. This is my conjecture, that it's closely coordinated, it would appear, for example, with the Office of Naval Intelligence, because in the same way that ONI seems to have reacted so quickly to the Stephenville sighting of January 8th, 2008, by scheduling the February 12th reported meetings at the UN, the Vatican seems to have moved so quickly with the Arizona-based meetings, sightings of April 21st, 2008, right next to its Vatican Observatory, with this latest announcement today, the 91st anniversary of the Fatima miracle / UFO sighting, which it, namely the Catholic Church, is going to have to do some mighty fancy footwork to explain away to its constituents as to why it sat on that data for 91 years.
That's a good point. Alfred, so, great perspective there.
Sorry?
Great perspective.
Yeah. So these are very exciting times. And, yes, I think that there is a close connection between, for example, the Democratic primary and the process that is occurring at the UN and in the Vatican Church. It may well be that this U.S. presidency may well be the disclosure presidency. If we look at the Clinton, it is very difficult to tell who the eventual nominee is going to be. It may well be what they call a dream ticket. But what we have in Hillary Clinton is an extraordinary person who, even in her high school years, wanted to be an astronaut, who has been a champion of space travel, and who was, we now know from documents, was the point person in the Clinton White House from 1993 to 1996 on the extraterrestrial issue to try to have her husband be the disclosure president, which he couldn't do. He finally said, look.
He tried.
Yeah, he tried. Now, with regard to Obama, there have been some people now through kind of the internet grapevine suggesting that he is in fact a contactee and da da da. But there's no objective evidence of that. But from the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, if I could just take a moment,
sure, please,
to look at what I think is a very important UFO sighting, and that's the November 7th, 2006, Chicago O'Hare sighting, in which a UFO described somewhere between 20 and 60 feet wide came down upon United Airlines gate C-17 about 4:30 in the afternoon of November 7th, 2006. It was witnessed by about 12 of the United Airlines ground crew, by the pilot and by the co-pilot, who radioed it to the air tower. The air traffic controllers heard about it. The FAA personnel. It was reported widely throughout the media, and there's a great deal of confirmation about it. And I've had a United Airlines pilots come up and talk to me who have said that they have landed at gate C-17 and that the air traffic control, that the ground crew there are excellent and are excellent reporters of fact. Now, the exopolitical significance of this, I believe, from a context communication point of view, is that November 7th, 2006 was midterm election day in the United States. And that was the day that the neocons lost control of both houses of Congress. They lost control of the Senate, and they lost control of the House. And I can remember at that point, because as a civil liberties attorney, we were very concerned at that point of the possible imposition of martial law in the United States. The Military Commissions Act had just been passed.
Right, and that's still a danger, Alfred. It really is.
Yes. But at that point, there was a safeguard brought in that the control of the House and of the Senate passed to the Democrats. So that there was sort of a safeguard put in. And from a context communication point of view, if you take that sighting as sort of a dream, like you would take a dream dictionary, it's saying the extraterrestrials behind that are saying, look, elections are very important. Get into the democracy. It's in Chicago, in Illinois. That's Obama. And Clinton is also from Chicago.
She grew up in
Chicago. So what do we have now? We have a Democratic primary that has gone on and has revived the body politic of the United States.
Now, we still really don't know, Alfred, who's going to win.
Oh, right. But that almost is not the point. The point is that after the 8 years of the George W. Bush administration, which has really battered the U.S. body politic, we now have a revival of it because of the dynamics of the Clinton Obama competition, and I've been positing them almost as a yin yang, and if they come up as a duel in a joint ticket, which we don't know yet, they could possibly be in this mix of the Vatican and the Office of Naval Intelligence and the British and kind of this open policy, they could be the power that finally breaks open the American disclosure gate.
That would be interesting, Alfred, even though, however, in the campaign, none of them will talk about this.
Right, right. The one who did is when they put the question both to Dennis Kucinich,
right,
and to the governor of New Mexico.
Right.
And then when they came to Obama, Obama spun it away, and he said, I don't really know if there's life out in the universe, but we have to take care of our things here at home. And some people say that he has a political style of deflecting away on questions that he knows about, but if he believes that it may be impolitic for him not to take a position, he will deflect away to a more politic position so that he may have a private position on the ET issue, but he may believe that it's not ready to come. It's not time yet to come out on that.
What's your gut tell you, Alfred? Are we going to get disclosure soon?
I think that we're coming right up to it. We've had disclosure in every part of the world, I think, as Paula was saying, except the U.S. And so I think that a Clinton-Obama ticket, if we can somehow, you know, do that, may have the firepower, if it does get into office, where we as a body politic can put enough pressure on those two to blast open those gates.
Well, I would like to see that. I would like to see that. Alfred, thank you for coming on. And Michael Sala, thanks for holding on, because next hour we've got you and phone calls, so we will be doing that in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast. Alfred's website is peaceinspace.net. I'll be back. Michael, what did you think of Alfred Weber's perspective?
Well, I think Alfred has a very unique perspective there, looking at the role that the general election, the current battle between Hillary and Obama is going to be a conduit for disclosure to happen. I mean, that's something that Steve Bassett and others have been proposing. I think that the political process is not going to be what opens up the secrecy here. It's going to be because there are these factors outside of the political process, like UFOs showing up increasingly, and that's putting pressure on organizations that are aware of UFOs, extraterrestrials, as to what exactly can be disclosed to the public. And so this is why I think the UN meeting was so significant, because that is indicating that there are these external pressures that are putting the heat on politicians, not only in the United States, but around the world, to start to get the message out. And I think it's very significant that it's other countries that are taking the lead. I really don't see the U.S. doing much other than making a kind of symbolic role of exercising leadership. And, for example, with the disclosure of the U.N. meeting, it was an actual serving U.S. military official that actually disclosed that. I mean, he has remained anonymous to this time, but he has disclosed a little bit about his background. He's worked as a U.S. Naval officer. He's a current serving naval officer, has been on assignment to the State Department, and he leaked the story of the U.N. first, and then that was followed about 10 days later by a French source, Gil Laurent, who disclosed much more information, and disclosing some of the names of the people that attended, such as the Archbishop Millior from the Vatican, Sir John Sawyers from the UK. And I think it's very significant that these other countries, Britain, the Vatican, and France are taking the lead in getting this information out.
Oh, it's huge. Let's go to some of the phones here, Michael. We'll go to, first of all, our East of the Rockies line. Hey, Tim in Kentucky. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how's it going, folks? Oh,
it's going great, thanks.
I was just curious that maybe the powers that be have maybe preemptively set prices in maybe in anticipation of possible chaos, or, you know, if there's such an announcement were to come out, would you agree, or could you elaborate maybe?
I think that's very correct, yes, that they are trying to prevent future chaos by people instantly assuming the worst, that extraterrestrials may be here to do all sorts of mendacious or malevolent things, and that this Vatican announcement that focuses on extraterrestrials being our brothers, being born without original sin, what that does is it sends a message that not only are they beings that are advanced, but they also ethically are far more trustworthy than we are as a race. And so essentially there's nothing to be frightened of, and that this is an actual opportunity to be embraced rather than a crisis to be feared. And I think this is one of the things that I believe the Vatican is now signaling it's going to take a lead on. And I certainly welcome that, just from an exopolitical perspective, knowing full well the incredible diversity of reports on extraterrestrials in terms of their motivations and activities, to have a major organization like the Vatican playing a proactive role, putting out this information that the extraterrestrials are our brothers, born without original sin, and knowing the influence of the Vatican, I think that is very encouraging. And I think that is going to help prevent the kind of possible chaos that Tim was mentioning.
Okay, good. Thank you. Appreciate it. Wildcard line, it's your turn. Mike in Arkansas. Hey, Mike.
Hey, George. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
Love it when you talk about UFOs and aliens and everything. But my dad was in communications in the Air Force back during the Vietnam War, and he's told me a lot of different stories about stuff that, you know, were code or top secret documents and stuff that I would ask him later in life, you know, with like, say, my wife present with me, and he just totally denies it. And I was talking to him the other night. Well, the first I wanted to ask, with the French and the British releasing what they have, wondering what kind of, if maybe they was doing that to pressure the United States to release the information that they had on that sort of subject, and wondering what you thought about that first.
All right, go ahead, Michael.
Yes, I think that there is a conscious understanding among the major nations that the U.S. Needs to at least be supportive of any disclosure of extraterrestrial life or any initiative concerning UFOs. And I think it's very significant that the French took the lead in putting out their files back in early 2007. They made available hundreds and thousands of files altogether on their website, and that that has helped open up a lot of debate about the reality of UFOs and the possibility of extraterrestrial life. And I know that the current French administration has been briefed by the French Ministry of Defense about extraterrestrials and about UFOs. I have learned that President Chirac had been briefed, and that Chirac was approving of this decision to make available to the public the UFO files, and that this is also the case with the current president, Sarkozy, who is very supportive. And what's interesting is that the role of the French military is very significant, because they seem to be driving this. They seem to be behind this push to get the French president on board with disclosing more information about UFOs and extraterrestrial life. And just in the last few days, a very interesting letter, an important letter by a French rear admiral, Admiral Pinon, was released to the general public, and that letter was directed to President Nicolas Sarkozy, about the importance of being proactive in releasing information about UFOs and extraterrestrial life and making the kind of preparations that are necessary for this kind of contingency being exposed to the world. And so this admiral was advocating that there needs to be rigorous study, that professional organizations, especially defense organizations, need to be participating in public debates and analyses of the data concerning UFOs and extraterrestrial life. So what we're seeing from the French is a very determined push to get this information out. And I think they are, in a sense, going to drive the process forward and force the United States to participate. Because as I mentioned earlier, the US, I don't think, are very supportive in terms of the black projects being exposed or their budgets being threatened. But they can't be seen to be kind of too passive in this. So I think by the French and the British coming forward and disclosing information, they're going to force the US to be more forthcoming in terms of what is happening. So at least the myth of U.S. leadership is preserved.
I was with Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian defense minister, at the Stephen Bassett X conference in Washington, D.C. And he was telling us just remarkable stories of what Canadian pilots have seen and reported. Man, it's all over the place, Michael. All over the place.
Well, that's right. It's just been an incredible amount of information that's been collected over decades, and this information has just been suppressed from getting into the mainstream, and pilots and professionals have been intimidated into silence that their careers would be threatened. But I think what is happening is that as we enter this new policy that I believe was inaugurated at that UN meeting in February of openness, all of these professionals can come forward, they can disclose what happened, and that there isn't going to be the repercussions that they once feared. So, for example, in these British files that were just released, they had reports by these radar experts that talked about a UFO, get this, actually landing at an airport and then taking off, doing a very rapid kind of maneuver at incredible G-forces. And so here you have an example of trained air traffic controllers with having visual sighting and doing the radar tracking, seeing a UFO actually land and then take off from a base. And so this is one of the files that the British have released. So you can imagine what will happen once these files are studied more rigorously and more professionals come forward, knowing that they're not going to be targeted and their careers threatened.
Let's go to Blair in Illinois. You're on the air with Michael Sala. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Blair.
You are a beautiful soul, Dr. Nuri. I listened to your subtleties over the last weeks, and, of course, the kind of things that you've built on your show are just wonderful because you're opening up a lot of people's minds. You're doing it very subtly, but at the same time, you're getting other people to also have to admit our biggest problem here on this planet, and in the United States especially, is racism. And the whole thing that's happening now with this election coming up is you have a black man, a mixed race man, and you have a white woman who is very rich. And you have them now having to come together or having people to be polarized where the Republican candidate is getting no kind of, shall we say, scrutiny at all. What is beautiful about that is because the moon face, the robot face on Mars, I'm sorry, on the moon, mm-hmm. looked Negroid. The face on Mars seems to be of a female Negroid woman or a feminine person. You've got the Sphinx at Cairo, which looks Negroid, and they blew the nose off of it, as you know, again. This
right,
is one
right.
of the things there. And then you have the city of Cairo, which is mispronounced. It is called Cahir. Cahir means Mars. And you have now around the Sphinx at Mars, around the pyramids there, a humming sensation. People going over there now, they can't sleep for usually those first 5 days because there's a throbbing going on there. I think our planet is beginning to come of age. I think people on this planet had better come of age. If these earthquakes, whether they were caused by the Switzerland, the CERN experiment there or not, something is beginning to make people have to think. And wouldn't it be interesting to see a black man and a white woman running the United States with openness because both of them come from two different sectors. But what are we seeing here? I think we're seeing a planet that better come of age. And if we can't get together as black and white and brown and yellow, what are we going to do with browns, greens, speckled, and everything else? I think it's a time for awakening, and I really respect you for what you're doing, and I hope you continue to do it even better.
You know, he's the one who should be running for president. Michael, we need someone like him.
Well, I'm very encouraged by what Blair was pointing out, because I think there is a lot of truth in this notion that as we reconcile the different races on the planet, that we are going to be much more prepared to be open to the kind of diversity of extraterrestrial life that exists out there. And that is something that I certainly am very encouraged in terms of the progress that Obama Barack has made in the U.S. elections. And whether he does or doesn't win the election, I think what he has shown is that the American people are really prepared to look beyond just the surface skin color of a person, but look at their integrity and the things that they address at a character level. And that really does promise some very good things in the future in terms of our ability to be able to open up and welcome advanced extraterrestrial life form.
Okay, let's take a few more calls before the break, and then we'll come back and wrap things up with Michael Sala, Fast Night. First-time caller line, Brent in Texas. Hey, Brent.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering if anything was going to be said on CNN or any of the news channels about this the stuff with NASA that's going on.
Oh, I'm sure tomorrow NASA's announcement will be covered by all the media, regardless of what it is, whether it's a simple scientific report or something even stranger. I'm pretty sure it will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, don't you, Michael?
Yes, it'll be well covered. I mean, NASA definitely doesn't have any problem getting its announcements into the mainstream news.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line, Dave in Philadelphia. Hey, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good
yes,
morning,
sir.
George. This story is on front page news on AOL this evening, all evening, if you open up AOL's website. And I went to research it further, and I Googled Vatican and NASA. And there's a website saying that there's a comet impact to hit Earth, a cataclysm related to the third prophecy of Fatima, and that the Catholic Church has been covering it up, and it's involved with NASA.
Do you think that's tomorrow's announcement or Wednesday?
No, this was on a website when I Googled the Vatican and NASA together. This article came up that it's supposed to be a comet to hit Earth, disaster, cataclysm, and I was wondering if your guest knew anything about that.
All right, Michael, what do you think? And I'll let you listen on your radio there. You were crackling on us. Go ahead.
Well, there has been some very interesting disclosures made by an Italian researcher, well, two researchers, Luca Scantambola and Christopher Barbato, based on their interviews and analysis of a Jesuit whistleblower who in 2000, near 2000, came forward and started to disclose information that that the Vatican had concerning an incoming planet or Planet X, the potential for that to have some kind of cataclysmic impact, and that the Vatican was sponsoring some astronomical research of the southern sky, where they believe that this object would appear, and that there was references to the Vatican conducting these astronomical observations in the southern hemisphere, Antarctica, and so forth, through its cooperation with the U.S. astronomical community. Now, I mean, I don't know how accurate that is, but it certainly does point to the Vatican being very interested in the research concerning a possible appearance of Planet X. And I think that the whistleblower, who was a Jesuit, is someone that was disclosing some very important information that the Vatican has. And he is anonymous, but nevertheless, the individuals that interviewed him, Christopher Barbato, an Italian researcher, was able to see his credentials and confirm that he was, in fact, a Jesuit who was working with a secretive Vatican organization called the Servizio Informazione Vaticano, SIV, and that they had been studying extraterrestrial life ever since the Eisenhower administration, when the Vatican was briefed on what had occurred at Edwards Air Force Base in 1954, when President Eisenhower had his meeting with some extraterrestrials. So That's something maybe I can take up after the break.
Okay, we can do that very well, and I'll tell you a little bit about tomorrow's guest as well on Coast to Coast AM, and then we'll take final phone calls. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Michael Sala's website is exopolitics.com, where you can get all the latest information on what he is working on and what other people are doing in this incredible field that we have studied for so, so many years. I'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Michael Sala. We'll take your final phone calls as well. Tell us a little bit about your travel schedule, Michael.
Well, I'm going to be here just for the next few months, just working on this conference now. And later in the year, I'm not quite sure what will happen. Well, actually, there will be one trip to the Nevada, Arizona, Four Corners area in late September, early October.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Wildcard line. Ben in California. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing well. Thanks.
Oh, great. I've been a long time listener to your show. I've always listened to it since I was a little kid.
Well, great. Thank you.
I wanted to ask either of you if you've ever heard of Gashar.
Gashar.
He's like, it's a channel. Entity
Gashar.
He was channeled from the Pleiades.
Well, yes. I think that you're talking about Daryl Anka, who channels the entity Bashar, who claims to be an Esasani, which is a hybrid human Zeta from some future time. Yes, I've heard him channel. Very impressive. I've heard him channel a couple of times here in Hawaii. Very interesting information he has.
Yeah, I saw a couple of the videos of him, and I just found it amazing. It like really opened me up quite a bit.
Right. Yes, and I recall him mentioning also a date of 2013 or something like
that. Yeah, there was a date. He predated a bunch of like a time schedule of the changes that we'd be going through of our vibrations raising, and because
I think this is one of the fascinating fields that is going to be explored once extraterrestrial life is acknowledged, is that they actually do communicate through telepathic means. There was one professor, Paul Davies, from Australia, University of Macquarie, mm-hmm. who had done a study on how extraterrestrials would be able to communicate through putting messages in the DNA of individuals, and that's where you could actually study. So, so there is this relationship between the communication patterns extraterrestrials have, and the way in which we can learn more about their historic involvement with us and what they're doing to interact with us at this moment.
Okay, Michael, I took a bet with Paula Harris and Richard C. Hoagland about what NASA's announcement Wednesday morning would be. And I said I think it could be a discovery of a twin star, a binary star, a burned-out one. What do you think their announcement could be? I'll throw you in the bet.
Okay. I'm not sure whether it would be anything more profound than what you've just suggested. I really don't see disclosure coming from any U.S. organization, because the U.S. is just too divided in terms of the different factions and the different interests that want to preserve the status quo when it comes to the ET issue. And an organization like NASA that has just so much information concerning UFO sightings and the possibility of extraterrestrial life, I really don't see it playing a proactive role here. So I really think it'll come from outside of the U.S. and outside of NASA. So I wouldn't say, I would agree with you that it's probably going to be something along the lines of just a new binary star or something like that.
Michael, before we take the rest of the calls, tell us a little bit more about Cardinal Francis McIntyre and his involvement with that Eisenhower meeting.
Well, that's very important, because Cardinal Francis McIntyre was cited to be one of the individuals that attended a set of meetings that President Eisenhower had with extraterrestrials back in early 1954. And what was disclosed by this Jesuit insider that I mentioned earlier to some Italian researchers was that after Cardinal McIntyre attended that meeting, that the Catholic Church had sent a leading envoy, and McIntyre at the time was the Bishop of Los Angeles. So he attended the meeting, and he then proceeded to fly to Rome to brief the current Pope at the time, Pope Pius, I believe it was. And on the way, the plane made an unscheduled stop in somewhere in Nevada, I believe it was Nellis Air Force Base. And then a military officer, a colonel, boarded the plane, approached Cardinal McIntyre and pleaded with him not to tell the Pope what he had seen at Edwards Air Force Base and to tell what President Eisenhower had been confronted with in terms of the extraterrestrials. And Bishop McIntyre, he said that he would go ahead and brief the Pope, regardless of his being an American citizen, that he had greater loyalty to the Pope than he had to being to the U.S. government, because the colonel had appealed to his sense of patriotism. So nevertheless, Cardinal McIntyre went to Rome, briefed the Pope, and subsequently SIV, this is that secret organization, was set up, or at least it had a new mandate to study extraterrestrial life. And I think ever since that time, the Vatican has played a very significant role in monitoring extraterrestrial life and has, I believe, participated or at least played an observer role with many of the black projects that the U.S. has undertaken concerning extraterrestrials.
Okay, very good. Let's go next to west of the Rockies. Hey, Bill, how are you?
How you doing, George?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Michael, when I heard the word Jesuit, I said, boy, I hope I can call and get through tonight. Back in 1990, I was a special metals contractor for the Vatican Submillimeter Telescope that's located on Mount Graham in the Prima Alta Mara Mountains, just, I believe it's north of Safford. And one day during lunch, I was up there. I was the person in charge of dealing with all the engineers and the architects and the Vatican representatives. I was having lunch one day, and during lunch, I was eating a sandwich, and I was out on the edge of a cliff reading a Bible. And a gentleman walked up to me who I had previously met as a purchasing agent for the Vatican. And he looked over, and he said, oh, you're interested in the Bible? And I said, yeah, I'm just a student of the Bible. And he sat down, and he said, well, can I join you for lunch? And he had a little bag of cookies. We started talking, and I told him, you know, when we first got this contract, my first question to my boss was, why has the Vatican invested millions of dollars in this unbelievable Vatican submillimeter telescope? So after about a week after meeting every day at lunch, he started sharing things with me, and he said basically along the same lines of what you've said tonight, that the Vatican has always been in the position since after World War II, investing in huge NASA projects, telescopes, space exploration, and he told me, I think out of the basis of he finally started to realize that he could trust me, that Vatican had done that for the purpose of they wanted to be in the position if any extraterrestrial discoveries had been made, they wanted to be the first ones with the information so they could filter out anything that went against the doctrine of the church. And so basically everything you've said tonight is right on. And after the job ended about 6 months later, as we were having one of our final lunches, I shook hands and I said, well, you know, thanks for all the information. And as I was walking away, he tapped me on the shoulder, turned me around. He said, Bill, one day you're going to hear of a fantastic discovery. And he said, I'm only telling you this because I'm getting out of the Catholic Church. He said, when you hear it, he said, don't believe it. So I just wanted to share that with you.
That's a great story, Michael.
Are you familiar with the Vatican submillimeter telescope located on Mount Graham in Arizona?
Yes.
Yes, I'm familiar with it insofar as I'm not an astronomer, so I don't have the detailed understanding of how a submillimeter telescope works, but I am familiar with various testimonies that the Vatican is very interested in charting the southern sky because they have received information that there is a planetary body that's entering our solar system which can create tremendous chaos or disturbances, and so they're monitoring that to see exactly what is going to happen. And there have been all sorts of stories about Planet X, and one of the things that this Jesuit insider supposedly had leaked to the Italian researcher, Cristoforo Barbato, was photographs of Planet X that the Vatican had been able to photograph through its telescopes. Yes, there definitely is this interest that the Vatican has in celestial phenomena, and I certainly see them as wanting to play a leading role in whatever lies ahead, whether it's a disclosure of extraterrestrial life, whether it's a disclosure of a tenth planet coming into our solar system that can have tremendous impacts on life on this world and on the solar system. I think you're right that the Vatican does want to play a lead role in that.
Okay, let's go. First-time caller line. Al in Delaware. Hey, Al. You there?
It's Rick.
Oh, okay. Just going by my computer. Go ahead.
How you doing? Yeah, I would like to ask your guest tonight. My feeling is that there is a few select people, such as the Vatican, that do know the exact date of the end of time, or like if we change dimensions or something like that. What is his feelings on that?
All right. Well, and I'll let you listen on the radio. Go ahead.
Well, I think there are many dates that have been proposed. The one that's currently got a lot of attention is the 2012 date, December 21. And many view that as being kind of the end of days and something that is to be feared, and that you know, we need to kind of go out and get ourselves some survival equipment so that we can handle 200 mile per hour winds and find little caves and so forth. I certainly don't think that it's going to be anything like that. I think that humanity has a tremendous power to influence its own future through the rise in consciousness. And I'm very happy that there are a number of leading researchers that are saying this in public in a very clear way. David Wilcock, who I know you've had on the show,
yes,
he's going to be actually a keynote speaker at the conference here in Hawaii, and also doing a workshop preparing for 2012 and the 2012 Enigma. And he's going to be focusing on that 2012 being a transformative date rather than something that is going to lead to cataclysm. And we are actually going to do something different at this conference. We're actually going to try to perform an intention experiment where we try to get people to invoke benevolent or positive contact with extraterrestrial life, because I think this is something that has been really untapped. I know you've had a number of guests here, Lynn McTaggart with the Intention Experiment,
uh-huh,
and others who have been looking at the collective potential we have to influence the environment. Well, I mean, what I would like to propose is to use that to have benevolent, advanced extraterrestrial life. Just as the Vatican was proposing, extraterrestrials who, you know, are advanced, without original sin, without any kind of malevolent intention, just appearing in our skies and bringing the whole contact scenario forward. And I think we have the power to do that. And that's certainly something we're going to be exploring in this conference in Hawaii, and it's something I'll be putting out information on.
East of the Rockies, Lance in Kansas. You're on with Michael Sala.
Hi. Oh, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Nice to talk to you. I'm struck by a metaphor here. It's Rush Limbaugh metaphor. If Rush Limbaugh makes he makes assumptions about what others might think, and then he says, since that assumption is so way off base, and it would be crazy if they thought that, let's talk about how dumb they are, because that's the scenario that I've just laid on the table. And I see the assumption that perhaps that the United States government is actually faking UFOs in order to elicit public responses, or that the Vatican is faking epiphany to, you know, I mean, realizations mm-hmm. or meetings with Christ and things. And I thought that was quite a jump. But my question is about something called mycelium from fungi. Have you heard of the Terence McKenna theory that these are extraterrestrials who could survive in the vacuum of space and communicate with us with hallucinations, especially in relation to your discussion tonight about, you know, seeing angels or seeing the Virgin Mary?
Well, I haven't yet come across any literature talking about an extraterrestrial fungi that's kind of intelligent, that's heading our way and can do some nasty things to life on the planet. I mean, the vast majority of reports that I've read from whistleblowers and contactees and witnesses typically talk about extraterrestrials being humanoid. That doesn't mean that they necessarily look like us. I mean, they might have reptilian features or they might be gray, but they're humanoid in the sense of two arms, two legs, and they bipedal and so forth. So I haven't heard of any kind of fungi ETs being in any way active. What you mentioned earlier on about the government faking UFOs to get a kind of, or to mislead the public, I think there is that potential that the government can actually use its fleet of ARVs, alien reproduction vehicles, to fool the public that extraterrestrials are doing things when in fact they're not, kind of like the so-called false flag operation that Stephen Greer has been mentioning for a few years based on what Wernher von Braun had told Carol Rosen. I mean, that's certainly a possibility, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think too many people are well informed now about extraterrestrial life and about the benevolent intentions of ETs, and certainly what the Vatican has said kind of puts a spanner in any kind of plan like that. I think what we can take heart from the Vatican announcement is that in fact the Vatican is saying that ETs are just like us, or they're even more ethically evolved than us, and that so therefore the whole idea of ETs coming here and invading us and taking us over is not something that is going to be easily promoted, given the Vatican statement. So I think we have a lot to look forward to. I think there's some very positive trends that are emerging, and I think a lot of international organizations are taking the lead to prepare their populations and the American population for disclosure of extraterrestrial life.
Hey, Michael, thank you for being on the program and staying as long as you have for us. Special night tonight. I'm glad you did.
Thank you for inviting me back, George, and congratulations on all the great work you do in putting this information out to the general public.
Well, it's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it. No, thank you, Michael. I do appreciate everything you've done for us. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.